Hello, I'm Regina Zona, and this is True Confessions of a Still Fabulous Diva. This is my true confession. I have crippling self-doubt. Okay, so that sounds maybe a wee bit dramatic, I must admit. I mean, my self-doubt isn't always crippling, at least not all the time. And for those of you who know me, this might come as a surprise to you. And there's a reason for that. It's because I hide it very well. And sure, there are times that I'm extremely self-assured and I'm confident, but there are times that I really hide my self-doubt. And the people that I interact with on a daily basis, except for my spouse, have no idea. But truth be told, most of my adult life, there have been times that I have felt like a fraud. And I have been terrified that someone might actually find out that it's true. I have felt derailed by irrational fears, and it stops me in my tracks from being able to accomplish some things in my life. I'm not quite sure when it happened. I mean, when I was a kid and a young adult, I was fearless. I was never afraid to get up in front of crowds, whether it be standing up and speaking or performing on the piano or doing monologues or singing. I mean, I remember when I was in summer camp, I was maybe around 8 or 9, and I had memorized this Bill Cosby routine about being in summer camp. I have no idea where I found this Bill Cosby routine or why I even memorized it, but I did. And so I performed it for some of my friends in the camp, and they really loved it, and word got around the camp that I would do this cool routine, so I was asked to do it for the whole camp in this talent show. And honestly, I didn't care if I made a fool of myself. It got me lots of attention, and I knew that I liked that. And so when I was in high school, I was in almost every musical ensemble. I sang in the concert chorale. I accompanied the boys and girls choruses. I played in the wind ensemble and the jazz ensembles. And I remember at Christmas time, the whole music department would do these kaleidoscope concerts in the gym where all of the ensembles were set up in the gym and they would take turns. Each ensemble would play one number and then another ensemble on another side of the gym will play their number and then it would go to another ensemble until, you know, they basically it was making the rounds around the ensemble. And so since I was in 90% of the ensembles, basically in this concert, I was running between each ensemble to get ready to play with them in their subsequent numbers. And the other thing that made this quite comical was the fact that every ensemble had a different uniform. So in the gym, between numbers, they would see me running from one group to another, changing outfits while I was doing it. And so basically, I'm running around the entire concert, making this sort of the Regina Zona show. And really, did I care that it might have pissed people off that the concert all of a sudden became all about me? No, it didn't even occur to me. Did I care that I ended up being the one thing that everybody remembered about the Christmas Kaleidoscope concert? No, I didn't care. I thought it was pretty great. So even in college, this fearlessness and need to be in the spotlight continued. I performed a full-length recital every year of my undergraduate degree. That was freshman year through senior year. Most voice majors in college are only required to do a full recital in their senior year and a half recital in their junior year. But not me. I decided that I needed to do one every single year, all about me. And in retrospect, it's absolutely ridiculous that my teacher actually allowed this to happen when I was a freshman or even a sophomore. But again, I didn't think anything of it. And even the success of my operatic career was built on one of the most fearless characters in opera, the Queen of the Night. You have to have the balls to sing the Queen of the Night, because basically you're singing two arias that are the most famous arias from the opera with basically no warm-up. You have to make sure that you accurately hit high Fs many, many times in these two arias. You are not on stage in this opera for more than 10 minutes, yet these arias are basically the thing that people come to the opera to see. I mean, some people might argue with that, but I know that if I ever went to see the Magic Flute, I only came to see the Queen. So at that time, when I was singing the Queen of the Night, they were really seriously the easiest arias that I sang. I never had any problems. I was able to sing them at 8 o'clock in the morning if I needed to. And there were several times that I had to. But that I really relished the attention that I got from singing her. Every time I would say to someone that I sang the Queen, I was greeted with stares and accolades, like, oh my God, I can't believe that you can do that. And I loved it. I loved that kind of attention. And in looking back, I'm not really quite sure when I let my self-doubt get the better of me. I don't think it was ever one thing. I think that it happened gradually. When I was younger, I was probably what they called a wunderkind. My talent and maturity were pretty much ahead of my peers. And maybe that's where I gained my unbreakable confidence. But then, as I grew older, all those people that I passed on the way up, they had been practicing and maturing. And all of a sudden, I realized that they started to pass me. Through the middle of my 20s, I rarely had to work for anything. I won competitions, I got good grades, I got into great schools and great programs, I got leads in productions, I got an agent at a fairly early age. So really, I skated, for the most part, through on my natural talent and luck. But then, all of a sudden, really not all of a sudden, but then I stopped winning everything, and I stopped getting offers, and I started resenting going to auditions. When I was younger, I could walk into an audition room and truly believe that I was the best one that they were going to hear that day. But one day, that thought process changed. I vividly remember one of my last auditions that I did in the States for my agent. It was for Florida Grand Opera. And I don't know if I was just in a bad mood or whatever, but I vividly remember being completely uninterested in going to this audition. And I walked into that room and I remember saying to myself, you know what, like me and hire me or don't, I really don't give a shit. And when I walked away from that audition, I knew that my operatic career was coming to an end. One particular event solidified in my mind when my self-doubt really derailed me. And it was when I was singing A Queen of the Night in a prestigious regional company. In the opera world, when you audition for roles, you are usually auditioning for operas that are going to be happening a year or a year and a half, or sometimes 2 years down the road. So when I auditioned for this company, for this particular production, where I wanted to sing the Queen, it was a year and a half before the gig. And so when I was singing at that time of when I was auditioning, I was still actively singing the Queen of the Night. And I really had no reason to think that I wasn't going to be able to sing it in the future. But there was a little seed that was being planted even on the day that I auditioned, that I was thinking, you know what? These arias are maybe not quite as easy to sing as they had been before. But again, I had no reason to think that I wasn't going to be able to sing it, you know, a year and a half, 2 years down the road. But then it got to be 2 or 3 months before the gig. And I hadn't sung the arias in a while, and I tried to get back into it and tried to rehearse these arias, dust them off. And all of a sudden, these arias were really, really hard to sing. My voice had grown in that time, and my extreme high notes, those high Fs that you need to have to sing the Queen of the Night, were no longer easy to sing. So I started to panic, and I went and I found a voice teacher that I thought might be able to help me. And sure enough, after a couple of lessons, this voice teacher had given me a couple of tricks that I could do that could get me through. And honestly, I started to strongly consider canceling this gig, that maybe I just shouldn't do it. But after I had a couple of lessons with this teacher, I realized, oh, okay, so maybe I can get through it. You know, I had the tricks and I could sing the arias. But I had decided that no matter what, this was going to be my last Queen of the Night. I was not going to offer her anymore. So then I got to the gig, and all the way through the rehearsal process, I started to really struggle. And I started to get really, really scared. And I felt really, really isolated. I mean, you know, the Queen of the Night is an isolating character anyway. You know, she hardly interacts with anybody on the stage. She's only on stage for 10 minutes. And because of that, she's hardly in rehearsals. But the thing was that every time I went to a rehearsal and did something, I was absolutely convinced that everybody there saw me as the weakest link. And that fear started to set deep within me. And it would paralyze me before I went on stage. I had never, ever been afraid to walk on stage before. And suddenly, that 10 minutes, that 5 minutes, that 3 minutes, that 1 minute before I would walk on stage for my first aria terrified me. And then after three performances of a 13 performance run, I was called into the artistic director's office and I was fired. So my biggest fear was realized. I was the weakest link, and everybody knew it. And my self-doubt was indeed right. And I think that that's probably the first time that I actually realized it. I realized that my self-doubt actually was fulfilled. So I stopped singing for a few years, and then I really had an identity crisis because I had built my career on the Queen of the Night. And finally, I was thinking, you know, if I was no longer a queen, who was I? Eventually, I got over it. I started to sing again and I moved forward. But now I noticed that the fear and the self-doubt seemed to be a constant friend in my life. I would start a project and there would be a voice in my head that would constantly remind me that, you know, nobody's going to take me seriously. I would need to call somebody to ask for their assistance in promoting myself. And I was terrified to pick up the phone, feeling that, of course, you know, certainly they're going to reject me. I mean, even now, there's a part of me that thinks, you know, why the hell am I doing this podcast? Who would ever be interested enough in hearing what I have to say? And what makes no sense is that now I'm 48 years old and I am more sure of myself. I'm more sure of who I am, of what I believe, of my true worth and what I have to offer in the world than I have ever been. Yet that self-doubt is always there and it's lurking in the shadows. This is what I know for sure. Self-doubt is fake news. Okay, I sort of can't believe that I'm using that term, but it really sums it up. Self-doubt is manifest through an incessant voice in your head that is constantly spewing out irrational thoughts. It has nothing to do with reality. These thoughts are irrational. So it goes something like this. I say, I think I'll do a podcast. And my self-doubt says, why would you want to do a podcast? Who's going to listen to it? Why do you think anybody is interested in what you have to say? You've tried these things before, all with these big visions of creating a following on social media, which will lead to millions of people following it. And then the national news media will pick it up and Ellen will invite you on your show. But every time you try something new, you get maybe 12 people to pay attention. And nobody engages with you, and you realize you didn't have the technological expertise to do anything that is more than mediocre, and within a week, you dump the idea. So why would this be any different? Just stick to what you know. You don't have any business trying to compete with millennials. Phew, that's depressing. And the more that I listen to this voice in my head, the louder that it gets. And then it's not just sabotaging my confidence in that one idea, but it starts eating away at my self-confidence in everything I do. So here's the deal. I have accepted that this evil little voice in my head is not going away. It is there forever. And I am happy to have it along for the ride because I realize that every time that voice starts yapping away, it is an opportunity for me to grow beyond it. The trick is that you have to recognize when that irrational voice rears its ugly head, and then you have to take away its power. So, when I hear, you aren't good enough, smart enough, strong enough to do that. I say back, whoa, okay, this is something new. But there isn't anything in my DNA that says I can't be successful at new things. There was a time when I didn't know that I could sing, but I started and it led me to a career. There was a time I had no concept of how to teach. But I started and I grew and now I'm a successful teacher. I have already overcome obstacles way more challenging than this. And then I hear, what makes you think you're going to stick to a project when you have started multiple projects and never finished them? I say back, just because I haven't completed projects in the past, doesn't mean that they weren't worth my time. Every project taught me something. Some of them opened a door that I didn't expect would be opened. And working towards those projects were something that I needed to do at the time. They served a purpose, even if it wasn't the original purpose that I wanted to accomplish. And then I hear, "What makes you think that anyone is going to care?" And I say back, "Maybe they won't care." But that doesn't matter. Ultimately, I'm doing this for myself. And that is all that matters right now. And if one person benefits from it, then that's a bonus. Okay, so I realize that all of this sounds cute. And it's way, way easier to say than it is to do. And that's true. But what I'm telling you is that it takes practice. The point is that we have to make a conscious choice to acknowledge that voice in our head. And when it starts whispering, say, "I hear you, but I'm not listening. I acknowledge you, but I am choosing to move past your irrationality. I know you are there, but I am sending you back to your corner." And I know that this sounds all new agey and self-helpy, but if you don't hear it and acknowledge it, you can't face it. And if you can't face it, you can't choose to move beyond it. You have to stay in that moment, and you have to take control and realize that reality is never as dark as your self-doubt. Here's my inspiration for the week. One of my favorite inspirational writers is Elizabeth Gilbert. You might know her. She wrote Eat, Pray, Love, which was turned into a movie starring Julia Roberts. And one of her most recent books is called Big Magic. Both of these books are really worthy to be in your library. And a little while back, she wrote a note to herself about fear on Facebook. And it popped up on my news feed and it really resonated with me. So I want to read you a little bit from that Facebook post. "Fear. I recognize and respect that you are part of this family, and so I will never exclude you from our activities. But still, your suggestions will never be followed. You're allowed to have a seat, and you're allowed to have a voice, but you are not allowed to have a vote. You're not allowed to touch the roadmaps. You're not allowed to suggest detours. You're not allowed to fiddle with the temperature. Dude, you're not even allowed to touch the radio. But above all else, my dear and old familiar friend, you are absolutely forbidden to drive." That's some good stuff, right? Thanks so much for listening. I'm really grateful to have you on this journey with me. So join me next week for my next confession is, I am fat. And remember, the only response to the question, "How are you?" is fabulous.